Today is Earth Day. Rather than celebrating how our planet rewards us with a livable climate, a natural food source, and beauty, this is a day of mourning for some who claim that mankind is killing Earth through climate change or global warming, as it was once known. Quite the ironic claim, by the way, when you consider how the founder of Earth Day killed his girlfriend and ran her through a wood chipper, which I guess is keeping with the spirit of the day. Anyway, we are smothered by the words of politicians and celebrities chastising us for our detrimental to the Earth behavior. Rather than bow to the easily swayed, I thought we'd spend some time on this matter with an actual scientist who has spent decades researching the processes of the Earth as a geologist. He's also author of the book, Inconvenient Facts, The Science That Al Gore Doesn't Want You to Know. Gregory Wrightstone, thanks for being here today, sir.
Oh, thanks so much. But, you know, as I look out my window last week, we had snow in three of the 4 days, middle of April and snowing. So,
yes, and here,
go figure.
Here in northern New Jersey, in the middle of April, we're still calculating wind chills, so figure that part out.
Right, right.
And let me give you Gregory's website for you to get your copy of Inconvenient Facts. It is inconvenientfacts.xyz. Important to remember on that part.
And can I mention, too, we'll talk a little bit more about the book, but there's at the homepage of that, I want to empower people with the information in this book, so I'm offering them a PowerPoint presentation that I'll send a link to them if they hit the subscribe button, because the information in this book is powerful. So I want them to have some of the 25 most important figures from the book for their use. That way, if their idiot brother-in-law from Passaic posts something on Facebook about polar bears, they can go, okay, here's a chart of polar bear population that actually, here's actual data. So I want to empower people with that. So and with that, we can get started.
Well, I want to add, too, that, you know, I've talked about with, as you know, listening with many authors over time, and unlike so many global warming books or arguments to the theory of global warming that are overly scientific and written for professionals, Gregory's book is for the layperson, and with the between the instructional text and the informational graphics, you do get the reality of the situation. But with Inconvenient Facts, how did you set out to make the case? Because obviously you knew coming out with a book like this, it would be a big-time blowback.
Yeah, there's well, let's just start with, I did not set out to write a book. I didn't say, oh, I'm going to write a book on climate change. What I did, I'm a geologist, and I knew that some of the things that we were being told by the media and by the Al Gore and his ilk were just incorrect. I suspected other things were, and I also heard some things from the skeptical side that left me scratching my head, and I just wasn't. So I went back to the base data. I said, I'm going to look at and see what the base data is. NASA, NOAA, the UN. What do they the actual science tell us? And in that search for the truth, what I found was frankly shocking, in that most of the things that we hear about, things like increasing fire, forest fires, droughts, famines, poison ivy, toenail fungus, you name it, we find that actually the science facts and the data are 180 degrees opposite of what we're being told. And it led me to capture this data and present it, put it in a book, and it's been extremely well received. The main thing I hear about this is that it's very readable. My goal was to connect with the non-scientist and present the data in a very readable, logical, understandable manner, use figures that the layperson can understand. Too many scientists can't communicate well with the public. They communicate very well with each other using acronyms and things that most people don't understand, but that was my goal. I wanted to write something that people, the average Joe in New Jersey or Philly, can actually pick up and read. And I'll tell you, I spoke at in Romney, West Virginia, just west of you, over in the Panhandle a few weeks ago. And I spoke to the Romney Tea Party, and there was a guy there helping me set up the screen. And, you know, he had the sleeves cut off at the shoulders, and, you know, I'm not going to say what we usually call those shirts, but he was setting up the screen. He started talking about my book. He said how much he enjoyed it. He said it was the first book that he had read since high school. And I said, aha. And at that point, I said, I'm successful. Now, that's not to mean that the book's done. I haven't dummied anything down. There are 14 pages of references in the back. Everything's thoroughly sourced and referenced, but it's presented in a way that the regular person can see, understand, and grasp, and I'm not overwhelming you with I give you enough technical information and sources to bear up what I'm saying. A lot of what I'm saying is not Greg Wrightstone saying it. It's experts on fires, experts on drought, people from NASA that are actually, I'm presenting what the experts actually have to say.
One thing I noticed, and maybe it's even, I guess we can call it a running theme, it seems like the Church of Global Warming likes to take a period of meteorological and geology history that was a severe anomaly, the mini ice age, for example, and they basically use that to cook the statistical books to prove their point.
Right, exactly. And it's dangerous but useful for them to cherry-pick data and only look, for example, the first satellite went up the late 70s. Well, we had just exited a 33-year cooling period. It started cooling in the mid-40s and then ended in the late 70s at the same time that the satellite went up. So they often use that satellite data from 1979 and on to confirm their alarmist claims of warming. It is warming. That's a fact. But it very much accentuates it when you only look at that period from 79 to really to the turn of the century. When you put it in the longer-term context, you see that it's part of a much longer warming trend. And actually, that warming trend started, we know what year it started. It was the year 1695. That's right, 1695. There were no SUVs driving in the corner grocery, no coal-fired power plants in India. That was the middle, the depths of what was called the Maunder Minimum, the coldest part of the Little Ice Age. And bear in mind, the Little Ice Age was horrendous. Each cooling period between the warming periods we see is devastating to the population. For example, in the Little Ice Age, half the population of Iceland perished. The northern sea around Iceland also often froze over. The cod fishing industry fell on its face. The River Thames froze on a yearly basis. And the last time that happened was 1812. So we've been on this warming trend that's been warming in fits and starts. If we only look at the last portion of that, that's when they try and tie the carbon dioxide increase to that. And again, if we look at the bigger geologic picture of carbon dioxide, we see since the Industrial Revolution, we've added about 120 parts per million. Again, I don't want to use a bunch of numbers, but your listeners should know that right now we're about 400 parts per million, 400, a little over. So we've added 120 since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. And they say that's an alarming and dangerous increase in carbon dioxide. Yet, if we put it in the longer-term geologic perspective, which is what I do in the book, you'll see that throughout Earth's history, prior to our current period, the average CO2 levels on Earth was 2,600 parts per million, 6.5 times our current levels of 400. So what we're in is actually an era of CO2 impoverishment. We don't have too much of it. We don't have enough. And again, we're at 400 parts per million. The U.S. Navy submarines often exceed 8,000 parts per million on the subs. So the Navy and the U.S. government doesn't feel that those numbers, 20 times our current levels, are dangerous for our Navy sailors. So we are living. And actually, one of the scariest charts in the book is the chart that I have there from the last 140 million years of carbon dioxide data. And why is it scary? Because it goes straight from 4,000 parts per million 140 million years ago down to 180 parts per million, which we were at the end of the last ice age, which is dangerously low. And you might say, well, Greg, why is it dangerous? It's because at 150, plant life can't live. Plant life cannot survive below 150 parts per million. And we were within an eyelash of that at the end of the last ice age. That would be a true climate apocalypse if plant life couldn't exist.
For a variety of reasons, for food as well as for oxygen creation and a whole lot of other elements, too. We're talking to Gregory Wrightstone, author of the book Inconvenient Facts, The Science That Al Gore Doesn't Want You to Know. Inconvenientfacts.xyz is the website. And you are listening to Issues and Ideas. The claims are that the ice is decreasing and the greenery is decreasing, speaking of vegetation. When you look at the realities, though, through satellite and through exploration, what does the reality tell?
Aha, great question. If your listeners are in front of a computer right now, I want them to Google three keywords, NASA, greening, and Sahara. Those three words, NASA, greening, and Sahara. See what you get. See what not what Greg says. See what the NASA scientists say. And what you'll get is an example of an Earth rather than spiraling into some desert hellhole. It's an Earth that's blossoming, that's greening, that's prospering, that's thriving. And the experts there attribute it to rising temperatures and increasing CO2. What you'll read there about the Sahara is that the southern Sahara, it's called the Sahel, is actually turning into a lush grassland. Animals are moving back in there that haven't been there in thousands of years. Gazelles, even amphibians are moving back into the area. People are starting to repopulate the area and grow food there. That's an incredibly good story that no one's ever heard about. That should be trumpeted in the front page of the New York Times, but instead, they don't even hide it on the back page. They talk about it not at all. It's these good stories. The true story of what's happening on planet Earth is that Earth's ecosystems are prospering. And a lot of it has to do with increased moisture content, soil moisture content across the Earth and in many areas of the Earth. And when you go to the NASA site I recommend from the Google, you'll find that NASA says that up to 50% of the Earth is what they call greening. In other words, vegetation is increasing. Only 4% of the Earth is what they call browning or desertification. In other words, a decline in soil moisture and vegetation. That's a good thing. That's a really good thing.
Yes, it is. I've heard meteorologists say that if any of their fellow meteorologists do not proclaim the theory of global warming, they should have their AMS certification taken away. In your book, you present, in Inconvenient Facts, a chart of the global CO2 emissions rising and the number of severe tornadoes, F3 or better, decreasing in the last 50 years. Your source of that information? NOAA.
NOAA. Again, they could. Your listeners don't believe me. I list the source right there, NOAA, and they could go find it for themselves. You don't believe what I have in the book? Go check out the source. You can Google; it's easy enough. NOAA says, and actually, the chart in the book I captured early in 2017. They altered their numbers after publication of the book. So in the book I list 2016 as being the lowest on record. Their corrected numbers show that 2013 actually was the lowest, and 2016 was second lowest. So for values of truthfulness and factual correctness, but even so, 2013 and 2016 were the two lowest number years of tornadoes since they began in 1950. And that's F3 and above, because it's with the satellite data, you have to be careful. Back in Tornado Alley, tornadoes could have touched down. There weren't many people there, and nobody would ever know it. So from 1950 on and using the big tornadoes, they feel pretty confident they've captured all of the tornadoes of that size. So, they've been decreasing.
I want to wrap up with this question, because when you look at the structure of the Earth, as a geologist you're very familiar with, and the power of Mother Nature, Isn't it arrogance to suggest that mankind can either influence or even overpower either one?
It is, and I'll say that Scott Pruitt, when you talk about arrogance a few weeks ago, he said, how arrogant is it for us to think that we know what the ideal temperature of the planet is? He says, and to that, Dr. Michael Mann from Penn State, one of the true villains in this story, said, well, of course we know what the ideal temperature is. It was at the time before we started adding CO2. Well, that would put us squarely in the middle of the temperatures of the Little Ice Age. And we saw how poorly that worked out. Now, cold is bad, warm is good, and history tells us that time and again.
And for you listening, science is not a consensus and a belief. It is a conclusion based on facts, and what Gregory does with Inconvenient Facts, the science that Al Gore doesn't want you to know, he does indeed bring together all the facts to go against that so-called 97% consensus. We've talked about that over the years on the show, too, about the bogus source of that number. And he presents to you the reality of the situation of it's not a problem, it's nature, it's cyclical, and when you compare it to history, it's not the bad thing, it's not the dilemma that many, unfortunately, claim it is. InconvenientFacts.xyz. You learn more about Inconvenient Facts, the science that Al Gore doesn't want you to know. More importantly, get a copy because it will be useful information, because no doubt the debate goes on, but facts do sooner versus later win out the day. Gregory Redstone, thanks for being here today.
Very well. Sleep well. You're not turning the earth into a disaster.